and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
It's, let's see, March 30th, and I'm with Mr.
Rudolph F. Elliott. I have a son that's Rudolph M., so put the initial in so as to...
I called your son first, and he screened me.
Yeah.
Okay, now you were telling me that you actually... I'm going to move it just a hair closer. That you grew up in East Warren.
Born and brought up in East Warren, Four Corners. Yeah.
And went to school there and grew up on a farm?
Yeah, I'm a farmer's boy. Yeah.
And what I was told was I should talk with you about horse trading, that you were one of the best horse traders that there was.
Thank you. Well, my father was a superman on any kind of an animal. And my brother, it was just my brother and I, my brother was older. He didn't seem to pick that up, but I did. And I was up at the sugar, Apple Tree Stables, Applewood Stables there,
yes.
Applewood Stables in East Warren. And Aunt Jan Tishman, which is, she and her husband from New York City, they own two or three skyscrapers in New York City, and she ran the place. Jan was a good person, but just like that. And so one day, I had my horses up there in the winter sleigh rides. One day, one during March, and everybody's in the office, so everybody told, other words, tried to sell their idea that there was good horsemen. So I listened, and so I told them, I says, is it my turn? And they said, yeah. Well, I said, I'm going to tell you something. I said, it may hurt, but it's a fact. And I can back it up. I wouldn't swatch my knowledge and experience in horses or horsemanship or any other animal for any two of your knowledge.
I bet that's
right.
Of
course, that dropped the chin. But it was fact. And I do seem to have good luck. Charlie Ellis from Castleton saw me one day, and he said, I sold him two colts, and he had two others. And he said, take the two oldest ones over to your place and train them, break them. So I told Charlie, I said, gee, there must be somebody closer by than I am. No, he says, I want you. Well, I was the oldest one I sold him and the oldest one that he had. Were the ones he wanted me to take over. The oldest one I sold him, I'd had him hitched twice, which I knew he was all right. But the other one, it took us an hour and a half to get him into my truck. And he was one of these that would lay his ears tight to his head, open his mouth like that, and jump for you. If he didn't get you that way, he'd whirl to kick you. But anyway, I got him over. And Charlie saw me one day, and he says, Glenn, can I come over and see those two colts hitched together? I said, any day you say. So he came over, and about noon, and I'd had his, not the one I sold him, but the other one hitched beside of an old horse that I had. Just about noon, he says, well, he says, get that other one out here. I want to see them hitched together. I says, no. I says, when you're working, come noon, you want to eat, don't you? And I said, these horses do too. But after they eat, and after I eat, I says, we'll hitch them together. And I says, if you haven't eaten, come on in, we'll all have a lunch. So so after lunch, we hitched them together and passed the reins to him. I says, here, Charlie, I says, these are your horses, you drive them, so no. And which, no, he says, you drive. And I says, no, I want you to drive him. And I says, are you satisfied with them now? He says, yeah. I said, bring them back anytime. But the one that, ugly one there, he took to his brother's place in Orwell, and boy, he liked to trample his brother in. And the last time, and Pete Woods from Passumpsic. No, not Passumpsic. What's that town near Woodstock?
Queechee or Cassville?
No. But anyway, Pete Woods bought him. He took him to Essex Fair that year and was in the Rubens in the pulling contest.
Is that right?
And the last I knew of that particular horse, he was over in New York State in a lumber camp.
No.
Which he either worked or else he stayed in the woods. So, but I've had two or three like that.
Now, you said your father was a good horseman before you, so
Oh, yeah.
You must have learned a lot from him.
Yeah, I learned how to shoe horses from him, yeah.
And you always used a team, or how many horses did you have on your farm with your father?
At one time, I had seven.
And so at a young age, did you start training them, or?
Oh, yeah. I handled my own. Yeah. I raised, after you called me, I tried to look for some pictures that I had, but I couldn't find them, so. No, I had, I had lifetime membership of the Holstein Friesian Club,
uh-huh.
Lifetime membership of the Belgian Breeders Association.
Uh-huh.
And I used, in the 50s, I used, went to Canada buying cattle a little bit. And then come bulk tanks, I get rid of the cattle. And I was always interested in horses. And so I went in a few horses. Yeah, and I had three mares. Yeah, three mares that had three of the top bloodlines of the Belgian breeders.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I had lifetime membership for Belgian breeders. And you get a little discount from being a member on registration or transfers, which when you come to sell, even a commercial buyer would give a little more for a registered one, which I think paid for the extra. But, oh, yeah. Yeah. I was in service in 42 to 44, and I got out in January 44, and I came home to my folks, and my wife and I went to Burlington one day, and Harry Harvey of Waterbury used to be a dealer in horses, and I told my wife, I says, my father tells me that Harry Harvey's got a two-year-old, which we didn't, if he didn't have so many horses, he'd buy. So we was literally getting back from Burlington. We stopped in. I bought her. He was asking $300. She was only 2 years old, never had a harness on, only twice. And I bought her for $200. Had a little Yankee trade in my blood. So. And so I brought her home, and that made, with my father's four horses, that was before tractor time, 44. And so when I wanted a horse, I used this particular, she was a chestnut roan mare, and that summer, 3 years old. And between Warren, down toward Warren Village, in the wintertime, she was, I think, 5 years old then. And I took a job of skidding from where they cut the trees down, skid the logs down to the roadside for trucks. I had her trained, so one man up in the woods and one at the head sent her back and forth alone.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, yeah, and I had had another horse that another man had started training that way. So I had two of them, and we sent back and forth alone. And but animals are like people. There's no question about it. Like this ugly one I had. There's some people are just like the way that horse was. And this one that I bought, a Harry Harvey, was super. She could understand what you said. And I, and like this one that I had from Charlie Ellis, he and I had have a kind of a harsh understanding a couple of times. And but he didn't want to listen. But I'm not proud of what I done, but it was either he or I. And then this one that I had that horse hitched beside of was a man I bought of George Randall over in North Danville. And she was carrying a colt, which I raised. And that one I hitched her beside of her mother, and never a problem. She was always sort of waiting to do what you asked her to. And that's the difference between the ugly one and the good one. But a lot of difference on how they're handled when they are young.
How do you tell? What do you look for a good horse? Or I know it must be more than what you consciously look for.
Any animal, the first thing I look at is their head. And I've judged a few draft horse shows. And take a horse that's wide between the eyes, between the ears, there's room for intelligence. A long head, narrow between the eyes, narrow between the ears, there's not much room there. So, and that's true with any animal. That's been my experience through life. And, I tell you, many times I have sat down near an animal and just watch them, see what their ways and means are. And you can tell a lot. And I have part of my field up in East Warren, rented to the Polo Club, has been for several years. So I run across this saddle horse. He was a runaway. So I says to Holly Ward, which likes to be the head one at a Polo Club, which Holly's all right, though. And I says to Holly, I says, you know, I know how there's a runaway horse would make a good polo horse, because in polo, they push them and spur them to go faster and faster and yank them this way. And that's why a horse is abused the most of any job. And so I says to Holly, you know, and he says, what is it? I says, it's a runaway. But I says, after you play a few chuckers with him, that's what they are in polo club, I says, I think he'd be all right. But I says, work him. He needs a lot of mileage. Get him a little bit tired, and I says, he'll make a good horse. No, he says, well, what about controlling him? I says, that's the man that's riding him. I says, he is controllable. And no, he didn't want him. So I heard about the horse went out west. Heard about him two different times. He turned out to be a super polo horse.
Is that right?
They were like, I've had a few draft horses that was runaways. If you got the work and time, work them. That's what they want. They want to go, so give them the road, let them go. And get them tired. They make a, I like them.
Now by a runaway, you mean a horse that is constantly running away with a rider?
Oh, run every chance he gets, whether it's with a rider or whatever. I bought a draft horse one time. It was during a haying time. That's when we was mowing, doing haying the horses. And this fellow told me, he says, you know, he's a runaway. I said, that's all right. So my brother had a lot of mowing to do, so one day got him home in the morning after breakfast. hitched him on the mowing machine. I had five horses, draft horses, in. After dinner, I put him with a fresh horse. He mowed. And I told my youngsters to do the milking. And that after supper, another fresh horse. And the next forenoon, he commenced to lag back. And you know, he was one of the best workhorses I ever had. But I had been, and gee, I done a lot of haying with him. But anyway, my brother had some grass to mow, and so I went over and mowed for him on a mowing machine. They're moving all the time, you know. Yeah, but I put a fresh horse in for half day. So
I've heard the one white foot, buy him. Two white feet, try him. Three white feet, deny him. Four white feet and a slip in his nose, take him out and feed him to the crows.
Well, my mother used to tell about, let's see, one white foot, well done. Two, will do. Three, leave him a B. Yeah. But I, well, when my brother was home and I was home, and my father had me stop to the horse barn, take care of the horses, and my brother and my father went down and took care of the cattle. And so, I don't know, more or less grew up with them. And, yeah. Oh, yeah, I still like horses. And I used to have German Shepherd dogs. Yeah, I raised a few. And next to the last one I raised, he was a super dog. Some of them are natural born good, and some are natural born miserable. And he was a good guard dog, natural born. And like being in the house, if I was over there sitting down, he'd be over there. And if I move over here, he'd move. And the last dog was a female that I got from down in Hancock. When you come over Middlebury Mountain, a high white house on the right coming down. Maybe you don't recognize it, but anyway.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Well, I was coming from Middlebury, and out come this dog and two half-grown puppies. And I thought I ran over one. So I backed up and went up, and there was up back to the house. And I told the lady and two or three other people there, and I thought I hit one. And she looked at him and says, no, guess not. Says, they're all right. Says, you don't know if anybody wants a dog? I says, well, which ones? Says, the mother or the pups. And I says, how much? She says, nothing. I says, I'll take the mother. And so she was a super dog. Like, sitting here, she'd lay down by my feet here. Over there, she'd go and lay down by my feet. And no one would touch her. Like, one person was in my yard, and I up the house there, and there were some lilacs. She says, do you mind if I have some lilacs? And I says, no, go ahead, help yourself. So this woman now, she carries me around some, just not only a friend, but anyway, she went over to pick some, and this dog says, no, don't. Yeah, very smart. But I had to put her away because I had a heart spell. Nobody could. I took her to Seeley's one for them to use for one time, but she was too much dog for them. And so I had to, when I had my heart spell, I had to have her put away. But oh, I love animals. But seemed to get along pretty good with them.
I knew a guy once that had a beagle that he trained to do, I mean, he would hunt not only rabbits, but partridge and
yeah.
coon and bear
yeah.
and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
I guess you can train a dog or an animal to do almost anything.
You can. It. Like this one that I had, that I could send her back and forth in the woods, I was skidding logs. You've got to have something for them to do, and you've got to have patience.
How did you get her to do that?
Well, I stayed at the skidway, and so I started long driving her, probably half from way from here to those other buildings, put the lines on the Hames, and spoke to her, and she thought I was still driving. So I followed her along, and I followed her back and forth with the lines on the Hames for a while. And then I decided, well, we'll see if she'll go alone. So I let her go far as from here to the other building, and she did. And then I went up and kept letting her go a little further and a little further, and after a while she went back and forth. And I told the guy up in the woods, I says, have something when she gets up there, a little handful of grain or something. And don't long before she's going back and forth alone. And you know, skidding the log, if the log got caught, she'd go one way or the other to loosen it by herself. Yeah, she was smart. Yeah, it's...
I knew of one guy that was logging in the woods, and the tree caught him. And the horse was able to lift so that he could get his foot out.
Gee, that's something. And you know, when you're skidding a log, like if you're driving a horse, you come down this way and around this way. Do not stay on the side there. Get on, let's see. No. Come down like this. Do not stay on this side where you're turning in, because they could pull a log against you. Yeah. You gotta have your, use your head, you know.
Did you do a lot of logging?
No, not a lot.
Just some skidding.
But I liked it. Of course, back then we burned wood, and so we had to get out our own wood. Yeah. Yeah, you know, life is funny. I wasn't supposed to live past the teenage.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Why was that?
When I was young, I was very sickly. Why, I don't know. And so I, well, like the Montpelier flood we just had.
Yeah.
I was going to school in Barrie at the auditorium, which was Goddard Seminary back in those days. I was going to school up there, and another man had a son up there. And so we was up there, and we could hear people down the street in Barrie calling for help and all this and that. And I presume the same in Montpelier. But anyway, our fathers came out and got us. And I remember coming through Montpelier and seeing the water, like, so when I saw that picture, gee, it snapped a 27 flood right into my mind.
Well, now, is the seminary, is that high school, or?
No, that's, yeah, that was seminary. Could be like Montpelier Seminary used to be there, high school courses. Yeah, but now it's an auditorium in Goddard Seminaries in Plainfield.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
So I had a two-year course there, and then during the Depression in the 30s, I went to Burlington Business College, took an accounting course, but it didn't amount to anything, because that was when the Depression was on. You couldn't even buy a job then.
Well, I guess. Were you living on a farm then?
I was living with my folks, yeah. Yeah, and then my brother and I both was in service. I was home 2 days when my brother went in. And I seemed to be the one that things would happen to me a little before they would my brother, even he was older. Yeah. So, yes, I born, brought up there. I've seen a lot of things happen in the valley. And some of them are good. And from up in the east part of the valley, from the Granville town line through the Waitsfield, there used to be 27 dairies.
Is that right?
Yeah, besides the other dairies around. And right now there's only one in the whole valley, DeVriest. They have what the Polo doesn't use for Polo, DeVriest have the rest of the field for raised corn. And so, quite a change.
I would say. Yeah.
But anyway, I was got out in 44, came home, stayed with my folks for a while. Let's see, I went in 42. And I did not finish my fifth week of basic training. They shipped in a bunch of boys from Ohio, brought in the flu, and really plastered the rest of us. Mm-hmm. Some of us was very sick. I had a temperature of 105.
Good Lord.
And I was out for 2 days and three nights, or vice versa. And anyway, another fellow and I had charge of service records and allied papers in the office. And a lot of boys came back without records, so we had to make some more. And then when the WACs came in, they put one with me in the office. And after, I think it was 2 weeks training, they gave me a medical discharge on account of my lungs. And the rest of my outfit had gone overseas. But I didn't have to go. I guess they figured I couldn't take it. But
so you had bad lungs as a kid growing up?
Yeah.
Did you have TB?
No,
or?
Not. My lungs wasn't bad, I don't think, until I had that pneumonia in service. So. But I'm coming close to, I think it's three times of crossing the threshold. The last time was 89, when I was going over to Sealers. In fact, I sold some draft horse stuff for Sealers, and I was going over to take the money. And just below Ripton is a turnout place. I stopped there, and this was February 18th, cold part of the year. And I got out and went around and stepped on the, thought it was dirt, but it was dirt over some ice, and down I went. On a 18th, on a Saturday, yeah, from 2 to 4, I laid there, and my hands was commencing to get numb, and my feet, you know, and after a while, a lady came along, and I told her I needed help, so she called a Middlebury ambulance, and they done a good job getting me up to Porter Hospital. Sunday morning, the 19th, they operated on me and fractured shoulder and arm, broke the hip and leg. Oh. And oh. I thought, and February 23rd, up comes the ambulance from my eyes run. And so February 23rd, up comes the ambulance from White River, took me down there, and June 23rd, I was discharged 4 months down there. And
oh, my Lord.
And I got three pins in there, and I thought it was three, but I got one big one. It goes down like that, and three little ones in like this. And I got down to this.
Gosh, your cane, huh?
Oh, I can't walk around on the floor all right, but
well,
outdoors.
It's better not.
No, because a little hole in the step down this muscle here. It's, now it's cut from here up here, flesh to get into the bone when they operated. And but I'm still here.
That's amazing.
But I don't know what for.
Well, I do, to talk to me.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Because I heard, you know, that you were one of the best horsemen in the valley.
Now, well,
The Fullers were known as horse trainers, but
Let me tell you, I don't want them to train one for me.
Any of them? Or?